Evening, everybody. My name's Greg Bright, and I'm an alcoholic.
Greg.
It's good to be here tonight. Thank you for inviting me. So, I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, right? Well, what it was like was it was always fun. And it was always the answer. You know, after I discovered alcohol when I was about 14 years old, I think, I liked it. First time. Tasted like doo-doo, but I really enjoyed it. And I liked that feeling, whatever that was. I liked it. And I kept doing it, you know. And I don't think I drank alcoholically right from the start. I wasn't like some other friends that tell their story. But eventually, you know, it gets you, right? But I used to drink like just with my friends on the weekends and stuff like that. We'd have a few beers and spark one up, you know, and it was casual. And it went on like that all through high school, and it never really caused me any problems that I saw anyway. So I thought it was acceptable, you know, to do that kind of thing. And I went on and on, and I think I was about 27, and I got married the first time. And we had our first child. And let's see, I can't remember what year that was, but I know it was a long time ago, and I know they frowned on, because my wife that I married, she liked to smoke, you know. And I did too. I did that a lot. I never did much other stuff, but I did smoke. And we sat down and talked about it one night. We had our first child, and back then, you know, if they caught you with any amount of that stuff, it would they could confiscate your car, they could take away your kids. It was severe penalties for having illegal substances. So we decided to make a pact that we wasn't going to do that anymore. We were going to quit. So we did. And that's really, I think, was the turning point for me when I went from a cucumber to a pickle. Because I needed something, because I didn't know how to live life on life terms, and that's what it was. So my drinking progressed pretty quickly in a hurry. You know, we were married for 8 years. We had two children. And about halfway through, I was fine. But then I got addicted to alcohol. And I didn't understand what was happening to me, of course, you know, because we're always the last to know, right? That we're a drunk. Everybody around us knows, but we can't see. Big Book tells me I have an inability to see myself as I really am. So I had no clue what I really was. And so it got bad, you know. It was weighing on her because I was staying out. You know, I like to play sports. I always played sports when I was younger. I did a lot of athletics in school and stuff. And, you know, I joined, I was on four softball teams when I married her. So, you know, I couldn't remember which game I had that night. I had to just show up and carry all my jerseys in the car. You know what I mean? And whatever they were wearing, that's the one I put on out of the trunk. That's the way I kind of lived. It was pretty, my sponsor called it damage control. Yeah. So, you know, I do have a sponsor, and he's got a sponsor. And I would have got him to come tonight. Usually he comes with me if I speak somewhere, but make sure I don't tell no lies or inflammatories, he calls them. But he just got out of the hospital this morning, so I didn't ask him to come tonight. I think he would have put too much on him to come out here tonight. But he's been my sponsor for a long time. We walked this walk for about 27 years now, 25 years now. So he's on and off. I had to get a different sponsor for a minute, Because my sponsor, he's not the best example of somebody that's married. I'm not throwing off on him. He'll tell you that himself, you know. So I was going to get married again, and I felt like I needed a better example of what marriage looked like. So I got another sponsor for a little while so he could model that for me. Got me through that. But anyway, get back to my story. So that went on and on, and I ended up getting divorced from that first wife after 8 years. And I went to a pit after that. It got pretty bad, and it stayed bad for a long time. And I wasn't seeing my kids. I wasn't doing anything a dad should be doing, you know. I was just so selfish, and so all the thing I worried about was how I was going to get a drink, when I was going to get one, and where it was coming from. And it seemed like it went on like that forever, but it wasn't that long. But it was a right good while. And I remember in 1992, I got a DUI. I only got one of those, but I went to jail a few times for being drunk in public and couple of bar fights for assault and stuff. It was funny. Trouble ain't trouble if you get out of it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Especially when you're drunk, because it's like, okay, well, what happened? Nothing. Okay. You know? I could go with that. As long as I was getting out of it, I didn't care. You know? So I never got charged. And when I did, it usually get dismissed for some reason or another. It was just, I didn't pay anybody. One of my friends one time, he got a DUI. I paid this lawyer like $4,000 to get him out of it. So, and I remember I used to play golf with him. And he said, I still had to do, back then I think they took your license for 6 months or something. I still had to do that, you know. All that stuff, pay all that money. I had to pay money. That was the most expensive ticket I ever got, was a DUI. I tell you that. I think it cost me, that was a long, 92, that was a long time ago. I think it cost me about $4,000 or $5,000 by the time I got done with the insurance and all that mess, you know. But I didn't learn nothing from that. Me and my girl I was dating, we were going out to Sleepy Hole Park one day out here. And we come off of 17 and turn left. And I'm driving, suspended, right? There's a license check. And I'm like, oh, no. So she climbs over top of me while we're waiting in line. And I think the cop saw it, but he didn't say anything. Here again, getting out of stuff, you know. And then I remember I was still suspended one time, the same suspension. And I owned a business in Deep Creek, and plus I was working. And so I'd gone to my store over there that night. And I closed every night because I counted the money and took it to the bank and everything. I was a functioning drunk. And so I'm going home, and they got a license check in Portsmouth. Well, there wasn't nobody in the car but me, so I had to go through it. And I remember I was about two blocks from where I turned to go to my house. I said, I live right there, man. He let me go. You think they'd do that today? I don't think they would. But yeah, he let me go. But he knew I wasn't drunk. I wasn't. I hadn't had a drop. And so I think that's why I got out of that one. But he should have locked me up, really. You know, driving suspended, right? But consequences, they didn't make anything to me. Consequences meant nothing to me. When, you know, there was all kinds of fines and penalties and stupid shit I did. But sorry about the language. But they just never mattered. As long as I could keep doing what I wanted to do, I was fine. You know, I was fine. So finally, in 2000, well, between 1995 and 2000, I was really in the cellar. I mean, I was drinking every day. And I remember one night I was talking to guy in Suffolk, old-timer Friday night meeting. And I said, you know, Buster, I never had that morning drink. He said, you didn't? I said, no. I said, sometimes I was like brand new, inside of 90 days. I said, sometimes I'd go home from work, though, and I'd drink, and I'd just pass out in a chair, you know, in my recliner, wake up at 2 in the morning, man, bouncing off the walls. I mean, could not go back to sleep, just all kinds of, you know, the monkeys running wild and all that. And I'd had to down, you know, hit me a couple of beers before I could get back to sleep. But I knew I had to get up at 6 and go to work. So I knew I couldn't drink too many, but I would just hit it a couple of times just to get settled out so I could go back to sleep for a couple of hours, you know. Buster said, that's the morning drink, right? See, I knew absolutely nothing. That DUI guy, I had to go to meetings. I remember my counselor at the DUI, DWI, he said, did you go to that meeting? I said, yeah. I never went to that meeting. He said, did you pick up a white chip? I said, what's that? You know, this guy was in recovery himself. He knew I was bullshitting, but he didn't say anything. He just went on with it. But in 2000, I got this sponsor. When I first came here, it was a guy stayed out there with me on Wednesday night and sitting there in Churston. I went back to when I decided that I, you know, some people say, and I say it, they're at this jumping off place. Well, I was in that jumping off place. I was really low, really bad. I run everybody off in my life. I had nobody left. My phone never rang, except for drunks calling me, because I was fun and I had money. That was it. But I was really isolated and just drinking alone every night. And it was a sad place to be, really sad. And that last time, you know, the trigger slipped a little bit. It didn't go off, but it slipped. And scared me. So I decided that Wednesday, that was that weekend. I went to the store Friday night, I remember, and got some beer, you know, usual thing, right? Nothing big deal. And I got a 12-pack or something. I drank all that. And then the next day, or Saturday night anyway, the next day, I woke up on the couch in my living room, and I looked out the window. And I didn't know whether the sun was coming up or going down. I mean, I really honestly did not know whether it was morning or whether it was getting ready to get dark. I'd just been out of it I went out with some friends on Thursday, didn't go to work Friday, drank the whole time. I remember we were at the bar and I was telling the waitress, we were drinking gin and tonics, and I said, put some liquor in it this time. She said, I filled the glass up last time. I was like, oh no, I'm in trouble. So I had about, I don't know how many of those. But that started it, and then it was on. And then Sunday morning, I went to the grocery store, and I bought a suitcase, 48 beers. And 11 o'clock Sunday night, I went back to get a 12-pack. Just in case, before they stopped selling beer at 12. I drank 50 beers that Sunday, and I never got to that warm place in the window we looked for. You know, that ease and comfort that we get from a few drinks, it talks about in the doctor's opinion. I never got there, and I knew I was in trouble. So I told myself Monday I wasn't going to drink. I'm not going to drink today. Well, the time I got off work, I needed a drink. Man, I was sweating bullets. So I went by and got some beer, and I nursed that's, I think I bought a six pack this time or something, but I nursed it. I drank a couple and that was it. Didn't sleep at all. And then Wednesday, it was when the internet was new, you know, and I had a computer that would get on the internet. It was dial-up. Take like 15 minutes to log in, you know, and stuff. But I found that meeting on there, and it's sitting there. I didn't even know it was. It was 10 minutes from my house. I could have rode my bike down there. But so I went to that meeting that night, and there was a guy at that meeting. And he saw I was in bad shape. I mean, I'm sure I know when they walk in, I can tell. I can tell that man needs some help. Let me go see if I can help. You know, but they gave me the group conscious, the little blue card to read. I remember. I know it seemed like it took me 15 minutes to read them paragraphs. I couldn't read out loud. I mean, my mind was just so gone. It's been a long time since I tried to read anything anyway, but I just couldn't read. And I thought, dang, you're in worse shape than you thought, you know? So anyway, this guy, he talks to me. We stayed out there after that meeting. That meeting was over at, I think it was a 9 o'clock meeting back then, 9 to 10. We were out there until 12:30 almost, talking. And he told me a lot of stuff about his drinking. And I knew that he had been where I was. And I understood that. And he said, look, I'm going to a meeting tomorrow night. If you want to meet me out there. So he was going to Ben's church back when they used to have the speaker meeting and then talk for half an hour or whatever. And then you'd have a discussion, you know, called New England meeting. They used to call them New England meetings back then. And, you know, when I got there, he was sitting on the front porch. And I was surprised. Because there towards the end of my drinking, my buddies would tell me, we're going over here tomorrow. And I would go there, and they wouldn't be there. They went somewhere else. So they, you know what I mean? Because after I got half in the bag, it was Katie Barr at the door. I remember one time it was Christmas, and I was pretty, you know, I was still functioning. I had a job and all that stuff, but I went to this real fancy party over at my boss's house, and it was a dress-up thing, you know, Christmas time, Christmas party. Nice food, all this. Well, they had an open bar, you know. So I shouldn't have drank that first drink, so it was. But man, I got hammered. So I go to use the bathroom, right? Well, I fall into the bathtub. And this is a nice house, man. This is a big two-story out in Suffolk, right near Sleepy Hole Park, them real fancy houses back there on the water. It's right on the river. And I fall into the bathtub. Well, I grab the shower curtain, and it's one of them real nice ones. The whole thing came down, pole and everything. So I was like, oh, God. You know, it woke me up a little bit. But I got real quiet, kind of shoved everything in the bathtub, put a couple of towels over it, come out the bathroom real meekish, lock the door from the inside, close the door behind me, and I ease on out the front and go get my truck and leave. Because I'm like, I am not going in there and tell them I did this. So anyway, we go along there, and so that was just... That was just one good one. Oh, I had a bunch of those there. But I'm just trying to tell y'all that I was a real drunk. But anyway, so it's I'm out there talking to that guy. He shows up that next night, man, and he kind of helps me a little bit, you know. But he told me he was an older guy, and he said, look, I don't run like I used to, you know, I'll be honest with you. You can see me at Centenary if you want to talk or something like that. He said, but I don't really. I go to a lot of meetings, but they're right by my house because he doesn't drive. You know, he's an older guy, doesn't drive at night and stuff like that. So I go out to Southern. Frank B tells me he's sponsoring this guy. So he gives me to him and his And I won't mention his name because I don't have very good things to say about him, to tell you the truth. But, you know, we go through the first three steps, and I'm actually feeling pretty good. You know, I miss September, and I'm on that cloud everybody gets on. I mean, you dry out a little bit, and I felt better. Man, I felt better than I had in years, you know. I'm dry, crispy dry. But I'm not drinking, you know. And it'd been many a year since I'd gone one day without a drink. And it was a miracle to me. So I go to this meeting one day, and I'm out there, and I said, where's so-and-so, you know? That's my sponsor. I'm looking for my sponsor. I called his house. He ain't there. I'm 8 months in. And, like, this guy is gone. Vapor. I call his house. Mom says, he don't live here no more. Click. Hangs up on me. Because she knows I'm from recovery, and she probably didn't. I don't know what it was. But anyway, I'm like, uh-oh. So what am I going to do? So I bounce around for about 3 months. And I'm going to meetings, and I'm trying to do the best I can, but I don't know nothing about working the steps. So I heard, you know those apropos that are in the book, Live and Let Live, Easy Does It, and One Day at a Time? Well, those couple of months, I needed something, and I didn't know how to work the steps. I didn't know anything about it. I knew what the steps looked like and that, but I didn't know any tool. I didn't know there was tools built into those steps. You know, so I'd use those, you know, every time somebody would start feeling edgy about somebody pissing me off at work or driving, I'd just say, live and let live. Easy does it, one day at a time. And I used that for my prayers almost, you know. I said the serenity prayer. Man, when I was first trying to live, I call it living life on life's terms. You know, without a drink, I bet I said that serenity prayer 50 times a day. I used to go in the bathroom at work. And you know how it is in a machine shop. You don't get on the floor. So I would put the toilet seat down and get on my knees on the toilet seat and say the serenity prayer. And wait 5 minutes. And I tell you, it worked. You know, it started to work. I mean, I actually got a little bit of something from that serenity prayer. Just doing that was amazing to me that it helped. So I'm at this 12-12 meeting over there one night, and I'm in there, and I'm still, you know, that cloud's gone, okay? And it's into October, November, and I'm like, or no, it was later than that, but I can't remember, but I think it's 7 months or 8 months, and I'm dry, got no sponsor. I'm living on meetings and those apropos. That's about it. I mean, I'm really not doing well. And it's drink or don't drink every day. Every day. But I tell you, I was determined. I did not want to go back where I came from that last weekend, boy. That was a bad weekend. So I seen this guy in there, this big-ass biker, and I thought, he looks pretty good. I think he could keep me in line. I needed somebody that was a gorilla sponsor. You know what I mean? You ever get those? There's one over there. yeah, I needed a gorilla sponsor. That's what I needed. So we go out to the truck, and after the meeting, I start talking to him, you know, telling him a little bit about what's going on with me. And he says, well, are you willing to go to any length to get sober and stay sober? And I said, absolutely. And he says, well, I'll tell you what, you get up tomorrow, ask God to keep you sober, and you call me. And we'll get started. I said, okay. So I did. And he's been my sponsor for a right good while now. About 20-some years. But we've been walking this walk. When we worked those steps and we read that book line for line together. And I never had anybody put that much time into me before, you know, in my whole life. Not even my dad. And Because I felt like that man had my best interest at heart. And I needed somebody. He asked me, he said, why do you want me to sponsor you? Really? Because I was unbeknownst to him, but he had gotten drunk not right before this. He drank one day. He had 8 years. He was sponsoring like 7-8 people. And he got drunk one day. And I didn't know that. I didn't know all that stuff. I wasn't in the grapevine of AA. You know? So he says, why do you want me to sponsor? I think he was skeptical. You know? And I said, because I need somebody on this planet that I can tell the absolute truth to. The truth about me and really the way I think. I need to get this garbage out. And I need a confidence that it will not be repeated. Because I don't know how about y'all, but how many times you been at work and told one of your colleagues something, and next thing you know, your boss hears about it. You know, I didn't understand for a long time that my colleagues at work were not my friends. They were good people, but they were there for one thing, and that was to make the most money they could for their family. And I thought it was all kumbaya, you know, because I was impaired. I was drunk. So anyway, I started going to meetings, and I heard y'all say, I'm powerless over alcohol. And I knew that. I was convinced. I was convinced that I could not safely drink because I had no idea what the outcome was going to be. But that life unmanageable, I don't know about that. You know, I'm like, I don't know. I'm doing okay. I got a job, you know, pretty good job, really, get paid decent. Still got a car, a truck, and a house, picket fence, all that stuff life tells you you're supposed to have. So I'm going to like my third AA meeting. Sorry I'm jumping around, it's just the way I talk. But I'm going to like my third AA meeting, and the right rear tire on my truck blows out. And I get out, I think it's a flat, you know. The whole tread came off of it. I mean, it was bad. It was terrible, man. It was bald. And I looked at the other three tires, and I'm like, how did this get like this? I've never done that kind of stuff, you know? I took pride in my work. But I just had gone so far down, I didn't care about nothing but a drink. And I'm like, dang. So I go down to BJ's down there and get me a set of tires, you know? Got no money in the bank, nothing. And I think I got like 2 years. And man, I had more money than I knew what to do with. I used to think I didn't make enough money. I stopped taking $80 out every night to go to the bar and drink. That's what happened. So anyway, but so I start seeing little things like that. And that's where I know new people. I try to tell people that I'm trying to help, you know, sponsor or whatever. And I try to tell them, just watch. Just learn to look and listen. And you'll see the things that you need to change. They'll come right to you. You don't have to go find them and do all that stuff, you know. And because that's the way it happened for me. Because I saw that. And then there was other things, you know, right along the line. Once you get sober and I get that little bit of clarity, you know, I started seeing the unmanageability in my life. Because that second part of that first step, I don't think that happens out there. I think the first part, you get convinced. I got convinced out there drinking. You know, because time and time again, self let me down. Self almost killed me. You know, I'm the guy I got to be most cautious about. Because if left to me, I will kill myself if I keep going drinking, you know, and doing things I want to do, you know. So anyway, that unmanageability became clear after I tried to get sober and stay sober. So I'm going along and I start seeing those things. And then step two, you know, it's, came to believe. What did that look like? That looked like, for me, I believe because the Serenity Prayer worked. I knew that worked because it kept me sober for a long time without no sponsorship or anything. And I was batshit crazy, man, I'll tell you what. But it did. So I believe that little portion of God, that was okay. I could turn that over to him. But the rest of that stuff, I was still checking boxes, I call it, managing. And it got worse. I remember I used to go to a Sunday meeting out there at Bunny's Restaurant back in the day. I don't think that's not even there anymore, but that was a good meeting. There was a lot of people in that meeting. It was Sunday morning at, I think, 9 o'clock or something. And I used to ride my bike out there all the time. It was a nice ride on Sunday. So I go in there, and I think it's like one of the first times I'd been there. And I'm sitting there, and I just listened. I didn't talk or anything. I didn't have nothing to say about recovery, so I didn't open my mouth. And some guy picked up a 20-year chip, Neil. And I'm like, no freaking way he's been 20 years without a drink. I can't even go 20 days, you know. But I was doing it, but I just didn't see that. I was like, there ain't no way, this guy's lying. And I noticed, I'm like, follow the money. Because it was a big basket of money. And I thought, that's the motive. There it is, right? That's why they come in here. They're getting money. Somebody's getting money out of this. But I learned later on that it's a joke. ain't nobody in here looking for money. They're trying to get halfway sane. So anyway, I had a lot of skepticism. And I still have that difficulty about being conspiracies and all kinds of junk, I think. But that's just my stinking thinking come out. At least today I recognize it. That's the difference. Back then, I didn't see it. You know, I couldn't see myself. But today, I'm pretty good at taking that 10th step at night. And if I don't find at least three things, then I need to sharpen my pencil. For sure. Because they was only one perfect one, and they killed him. So I go along there, and I see that unmanaged belt, and I start to try to come to believe. So I got like a year, a little over a year, right? And I'm working for, I'm doing engineering work, and I'm working for this engineering firm. And my boss says, hey, Greg, I need you to take a trip, you know? And I'd been on a few trips. I'd been to Wisconsin a couple times. We had some work up there, and I'd been to San Diego, out there. I was pretty good at my job, and I was reliable when I was working. And you know, I always finished whatever task they gave me. I got it done, and usually without incident, you know. So they trusted me. And I said, where are we going? And I said, we, but it was just me. And he goes, oh, we're going to Deutschland, man. I said, Deutschland, what's that? And he goes, the Netherlands in Europe. I said, look it up on the map, you'll see it. So I did. My plane was landing in Amsterdam. I got like 14 months. And I'm like, man, I tell you what. That's Sin City right there, buddy. I mean, they got the windows with the girls in there. That's real, okay? It's a, you know, coffee shops ain't selling coffee, okay? I mean, you can smell it from the sidewalk, you know? They're in there doing whatever they're doing. And I'm like, dang, I'm in trouble. So anyway, my job was like 30 miles south of there, so I had to drive down there. So I'm at my job, and it goes pretty good. You know, we have a production meeting, and so Saturday, we're not working this Saturday because there's a problem with some of the parts. I found some discrepancies in the welds and stuff, so I'm going to fix it. So anyway, they weren't real happy with me. But so I'm sitting in this cafe Saturday afternoon, and it's a beautiful fall day. Man, I'm in the Netherlands. You know what the Netherlands is, don't you? I don't want to offend any women, but it's the land of the 6-foot blind, man. Really. I mean, you walk down the sidewalk, I fell in love 20 times going to the hotel, you know. I'm like, wow. I wasn't married back then, so I was looking. But I don't know what I'd done with it, but I was looking. But anyway, so I'm in the Netherlands. It's just beautiful. So the coffee they serve over there is my, you know, we got these little cups like this. They bring you an espresso in a cup that looks like a bowl. And that's what I was drinking, was espresso. I was sitting out, I'm outside in this sidewalk cafe, and it's a beautiful day, the leaves are changing. And man, this is nice. And then I thought, you know, I could have a drink. Nobody would know. I'm halfway around the world. And then I thought, nah, just wait till tomorrow. Okay, tomorrow's Saturday. I'll be all right. So, or tomorrow Sunday. And so I go on, you know, about my day. I go to dinner that night. And I'm thinking, boy, I could have one of those drinks, you know. After cocktails, like Bill's story, right? Have a couple cocktails, or that, no, that's the salesman. Have a couple cocktails after meal, right? And I didn't know. I was like, nah, I better wait till tomorrow. So I go upstairs to my room, and there's a guy right across the hall. I know I told this story in some meetings. Y'all might have heard it, but this was profound. This is God doing for me what I can't do for myself. He's showing me his self to be. Because Foy used to say, take it all the way out. If you're thinking about taking that drink today, where's it going? And I knew when I stopped drinking, I couldn't guarantee where it was going. I could not do that. So there's a guy standing there, and he is hammered, dude. This guy is wasted. And he's trying to get, this is back when they had real keys for the doors in the hotels. And he's trying to get his key in the door. He can't get it in the door. So I go up there and I'm quiet. You know, I don't want to startle him, have him punch me or something. I said, hey, man, let me help you with that. And he goes, oh. He just hands me, he don't say anything because he's pretty wasted. And so I unlock the door, and he staggers on in. I throw the key on the floor and close the door. It locks, you know. And I get back to my room, and I said, is that what it looks like, God, for me? Is that what it looks like? Because I knew it was. He was just showing me. I mean, what are the chances of me being in another country in some hotel I never even thought about being in, and this guy's drunk across the hall when I'm thinking about taking a drink that day after I've been sober for almost a year and 4 or 5 months? What are chances of that? That's a God thing, man. It's got to be. And so I saw that and showed it to me right there. And then I began to see other things like that. And then, you know, one thing that it taught me, the lesson I learned from that, was to pray before I'm in the belly of the whale. Right? The story of Jonah where he gets in the whale and then he prays to God and then the whale spits him out, right? Well, I learned to pray before I was in the belly of the whale. After that. And that, it was, there's a line in the, sorry about getting churchy on y'all, but Hebrews 11:1, it says, what is faith? Says faith is the evidence of things not yet seen. And that's what faith is. It's just trusting until it happens. That's the way it went for me. Was just trust God until it happens. And that didn't happen overnight. That was not a burning bush for me. But those little things along the way like that convinced me that there was a God and he was working in my life. And so I went along, and man, I tell you, today and years past, I don't know what my life would have looked like if I'd probably been dead by now, but I know that I wouldn't have had the life that I got now. You know, I mean, I served that in that capacity, and that led to a couple other jobs, and then I got the job. And I just retired first of the year. I actually get, they're going to pay me a small pension. You know, I get Social Security, and I'm retired. I worked 53 years, continuous employment. Never drew a day's unemployment, nothing. And I retired this year. And I tell you what, man, it's nice. You know? Not bragging or anything, I'm just like, I can't believe it that I made it, you know? I had a couple of people say, man, you got plenty of money in the bank. You don't need to do that, you know? You could quit now. You know, I was 65, right? And I said, nah, I just want to finish. You know, because that's one thing Alcoholics Anonymous taught me when I did my inventories and stuff, that I was a great starter, but I was a lousy finisher. I hardly ever finished anything. I did make it through apprenticeship program, a four-year program, and I did finish my 2 years of college. But I swear that in high school was about the only thing I ever finished. The rest of the crap, I'd start and never get good, never progress at it. You know, it would get rough and I'd just quit. You know, just stop. And I just wanted to finish something, and I did. And I kind of like that. You know, it gives you a little bit of self-esteem, maybe too much pride. And my sponsor was actually worried about me when I was talking about retirement and stuff, because he said, you know, you have always defined yourself by your job. I'm wondering how you're going to do in retirement. Well, he's resting peacefully now because I'm settling right in. You know, I got more time to help people. That's one of my things I'm doing more of, is I'm helping people. I'm going to more meetings, and I'm trying to help as many people as I can. That's my goal, to find this grace of sobriety that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't tell you how my life's changed. I got married again when I was 59, and she was 54, I think. She's 3 years younger than me. And because I stayed single for a long time. I was in AA, and I was kind of new. I fell in heat quite a few times. But I fell in heat quite a few times, you know. But this was different. This was real love. We actually took our time, and, you know, I courted her for a long time, and it was great. And it was great, and started our relationship that we're building now on a good plane, on a great plane, actually. And I think that foundation, you know, we had some bumps and humps and bumps, but what we did was, you know, I got some workbooks about marriage, and you could do them, you know, I'd buy two of them. And we actually worked through those problems like that, using professional help, you know, not going to counseling, but we did it ourselves. You know, we used a faith-based book called the Bible, and we used those workbooks, and we have built a good relationship. I've never had such strong bonds with anybody in my life, and it's not all about, you know, when you get to be my age, it's not all about the hotness in the bed and all that stuff. It's deeper than that, you know. Me and her, we've been to seven countries so far, traveling, and we really enjoyed that. You know, I've been to places I thought I'd never go, but it's been a good life, and it still is, and we are still in it, and we are living life today on life's terms, and we are just, it's just a blessing. I can't tell you how good my life is today. The grace of God has poured on me. And I just don't know how else to say it. And I guess that's it, right? We good? Yeah. All right. Thanks. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, Greg, thank you so much. That was good. Okay.